Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the Video Store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning.
Morning, Russell.
How are you, my G-Force?
All right, dude. How are you?
I'm lekker, man.
Nice.
I'm lekker. I'm wearing my jerseys.
Yes. It's that weather.
It's no longer t-shirt weather.
No.
Welcome to the Video Store. Thank you for moseying on over and wandering in. We've got lots of lovely movies and series on our shelves here. And we've watched a whole bunch of cool stuff.
Yeah.
And while you browse, myself and Graham over here are going to have a little fat chat behind the counter. Graham, you're an editor.
Correct.
And very much the producer of the show. We're not working a shift at the Video Store. And my name is Russell, and I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And it's just the two of us.
Yes.
And it's going to be a lekker day.
Nice.
We always like to kick things off with a little, hey, did you guys see?
Yeah.
Then we're going to stock the shelves, do a little bit of work. Do a little bit of work. but then I want to talk to you about things like Thunderbolts.
Yes.
Which is the new big Marvel movie that we went and watched last week. We got to go to a media premiere of it. It is obviously now in cinemas. And there's a few other things. There's some cool TV shows I've been binging.
Oh, nice.
There's a lekker one over on Netflix, which I want to talk about.
Cool.
So we'll get into it.
Nice.
Cool. Do you want to kick things off?
Sure, I can kick things off. Some of these are a little old because they haven't been around in a while. But hey, did you see the trailer for Tron Ares?
No, not properly.
Okay. Well, we finally got it. It was announced a while ago. They've been trying to make another Tron forever.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Tron is a franchise that's never been popular. They keep trying.
There was the original in what, the sort of 80s? Tron,
yes, that would have sometime in the 80s. One of the very first movies to use CGI.
It almost looks like a Dire Straits music video.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was the kind of more rebooty one.
Yeah, then there was Tron Legacy, which was 2010 sometime. I can't remember exactly what year.
Where we first saw a version of a de-aged Hollywood star.
Yeah.
And everyone was a little upset by
it. Everybody's like, because they just put a CGI head on Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work.
Yeah, and he sort of looked like a little bit of a waxy figure.
Yes.
Okay, but now the new one is coming. I've seen the date. It's about September-ish.
Yeah.
And what makes this one special is that Nine Inch Nails are doing the soundtrack.
Yes. Curiously, that's in the trailer. They don't put any other names. There's no like directed by. There's no starring. It's just original music by Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah,
that's kind the of only a, like credit that's given in the trailer.
Kind of a big deal, I guess.
Because Daft Punk did Tron Legacy.
Yeah,
and that went down quite well.
What is interesting is that the members of Nine Inch Nails, which is a very famous, what would you call them, industrial?
Yeah,
that was a genre name at one point in the 90s and noughties. Went on to be very successful music scorers. This is Trent Reznor, who was the lead singer and front person of Nine Inch Nails, as well as another dude who's got arguably the coolest name in the world, Atticus Ross.
Yeah,
and they found their creepiness. And unsettling music, which always kept them in a rather underground but very celebrated music appreciation world with Nine Inch Nails, actually could work for very particular kinds of cinema and could be very successful in that. So they are the reason why The Social Network is as unsettling and unnerving as it is.
Won a few Oscars along the way.
They've done very well for themselves. They did Challengers, which was brutally snubbed.
Yeah, big time.
In this last Oscar race. But now, instead of being themselves as Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, they are scoring a film, but as Nine Inch Nails, which is a very interesting move to sort of change the box that the music comes in.
I assume it's mostly like a marketing thing. Like the previous one was music by Daft Punk.
Yeah.
Instead of by the, you know, the guy, the two guys from Daft Punk, now it's the music by Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah,
you know,
it's clearly, I think it's interesting that they're using that as a marketing ploy, because yes, very rarely does a movie do that.
Mm.
So it's something different, I guess.
Yeah.
This is also a somewhat older thing, but it's just worth mentioning. Hey, did you guys see the Oscar ceremony rules came out where they are insisting that every Academy member watches every movie.
Yes.
And there's been a lovely meme that's all kind of joke that's floated around the internet with someone commenting below that going, they didn't already do that?
Yeah.
And that is just worth a mention. Not so much the rules in the Academy, but just the fact that we as the audience watching this press release come out go, what?
Yeah.
You didn't already do that?
Yes.
So for the longest time, and we're almost at 100 Oscars, if you are a member of the Academy, you are able to vote in the Oscars. And it's, do we know how many Academy members there are?
A few thousand. I don't know exactly.
People, if you've won an Academy Award, you form part of the Academy thereafter. You can be banned if you slap someone.
Yes.
And so it's this big old club. And I just find it very interesting that you never actually had to have watched all of them. All the contenders for you to cast this vote, which just shows you how fucking stupid and rigged it's been.
Yeah.
And then there's now also coming out that a lot of Academy members have just, through the app, because obviously it used to be these screeners that got sent.
Yeah, they would send discs or whatever else.
Sent discs, and that was obviously a mission, but relative to its time, perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Now you probably can sign into a particular portal app, and some of them are admitting to just letting it play in the background so that it marks as being played.
Yes.
But it just shows you. It just shows you the disconnect. And I think every year they try and make the Oscars as relevant as they can.
Yeah.
They want it to be relevant. The Oscars want themselves to be relevant. But it just shows you that the general public is like, what?
Yes. But I don't know how they're going to like enforce this or ensure that people
Seen they
them,
can't do anything more than you know, have it play in the background while you make...
Promise?
Yeah.
You promise you watched it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's asking extra work from people that weren't putting in that time.
Yes.
But it's just, I just think it's an interesting
thing,
and it just highlights some of that disconnect.
Mm. Hey, I'm going to do two because they're connected. Did you see the trailer for Killer of Killers and the trailer for Predator Badlands?
I didn't see Killer... What?
Killers? Killer of Killers.
What's that?
It's an animated Predator movie.
Oh.
So we're getting two Predator movies this year, both directed by Dan Trachtenberg.
Now, you've mentioned him.
Yeah, he's the guy who did Prey, which was the last Predator movie we got.
Prey was really good.
Prey was awesome. I loved Prey.
I've pretty much missed, and to be honest, don't love or care for the Predator movies.
Yeah.
I know you and Cole do.
The first one, basically. Mostly the first one.
Yeah. I watched the first one a lot later in life going, this is something I feel like I need to have seen.
Right.
And I think I was obviously a bit too old and a bit too like, okay. But I can imagine in its time being awesome. Prey came out, which kind of reinvigorated it.
Yeah.
Which was like, what if this was set in early Native American times?
It's like 200 years ago.
Which is very interesting, very big swing, and it was awesome.
Yes.
Because it got to the heart of what made this movie cool.
Yeah. And it went straight to streaming, and everybody went, why is this on streaming? This should have been in theaters.
I think that was a COVID thing, wasn't it?
I think they originally just planned it as they did the same thing with Alien Romulus. Romulus was supposed to be a streaming movie.
Okay.
But then because Prey was successful, that's what made them go, okay, wait, let's put Alien Romulus in theaters.
Let's give it some theater love. Yeah. Okay, but then we knew Badlands was coming.
Yes.
And I think what we thought it was going to be is not really what it's revealed itself to be in the trailer. Am I right?
Okay, I'm not sure. I didn't know anything about it.
Okay. I think because we spoke about this on the show, we were hoping that Badlands might be the same idea as Prey, which is like set in another time
in
history. I think you proposed that could have been the case.
Yes.
But we've now seen the trailer and it's like not that.
Yeah. So this is Killer of Killers is the animated, it's an animated anthology film. and okay. each one is set in a different time period.
Okay, that's one honoring that idea, which is cool.
There's one with like Viking time period, there's one that's samurai, and then there's another one that's World War II.
That's cool.
So it's three stories. It's one movie, though. It's not like episodes, so I'm curious as to see if they're going to connect them in some way.
Okay.
Because it's an anthology, but either way. I'm excited. I think it looks pretty cool.
Where is that going to be?
Disney Plus.
Okay.
So that's going to be a streaming film, but Badlands is going to theaters.
Badlands looks like it's set on the planet where these things are come from.
It could be, yes. It's definitely much more sci-fi. You have, I don't know which Fanning it is. It's one of the Fannings playing an android.
Okay.
Which curiously seems to be an android made by Weyland-Yutani, which is the Aliens company. So it seems like they're already setting up another Alien versus Predator movie. Because Dan Trachtenberg said that it wasn't Dan Trachtenberg, it was Fede Alvarez, who directed Alien Romulus, who said he wants to make an Alien versus Predator movie with Dan Trachtenberg.
Okay.
So it seems like they might actually be laying the groundwork for that here.
But they've always been in the same world, those two movies. The Alien world and the Predator world. They crossed them over
in comic books quite early. But it seems like if you want to like fuss about lore and canon and shit, it seems like the Predator movies and the Alien versus Predator movies are connected. But the Alien movies are completely separate.
Okay.
If you want to get into like multiversal nonsense.
It's when Perrin puts up his glasses and goes, well, really?
Yes.
Actually.
But either way, I think they both look pretty cool.
Cool.
I think they both look fun.
Yeah.
And Dan Trachtenberg's a pretty good director. So.
Okay. Has he done anything else?
He did 10 Cloverfield Lane, which was really good.
Okay. I remember that. I never saw it, but I remember that.
It's really, really good.
Okay.
Just a good small movie.
Have you seen that Netflix is really pushing their Ta-Dum event? Do you know what the Ta-Dum event is?
Kind of. I know I've seen like videos on YouTube for it, but I don't know what it's about.
I just love this idea of economies and trying to build economies around media.
Yes.
So I think, this is my reading of it, that a company will always have a sort of conference that announces their upcoming things.
Yes, D23, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think really in our sort of more modern society, something like the Apple announcements have become a spectacle.
Yes.
Because in these moments of sort of history-changing innovation happen.
Right.
Then, as you said, the Disney company do their D and they count them up, right?
No, I think it's always D23.
Oh, what does the 23 stand for?
I can't remember. I remember looking this up.
I always thought that happened in 2023.
That's what I thought as well.
D25.
It's D23 every single year, and there is a reason for it, and I'm going
to
look it up.
Okay, and then this is their big chance to do what any normal corporate does, which is announces their upcoming spectacles, their upcoming films. But in that Comic-Con economy, They've tried to capitalize on this and make it a thing and turn it into something fun and exciting, and it's a chance to build media hype, make announcements, and build an economy. Netflix have seemingly been doing the same thing, and they call this event their Ta-Dum event, because you're obviously referencing their opening noise.
Yeah, that like sound.
Yeah. Which apparently comes from House of Cards. Did you know that?
Their first
commissioned show.
Okay.
That's a sound effect that's in House of Cards.
Right.
And it's going to be on the 31st of May, so it's going to be at the end of this month, and it's going to be something that you live stream on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is just interesting.
Interesting, yes.
It's just interesting that, and you sort of wonder, like, who would tune into that?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, who would get, like, excited about that?
Who are the Netflix super fans?
Yeah, and it's like,
do they exist?
Well, this would create it, I guess. That's the, you know, that's what I think is interesting, is that there's no harm in them doing it. They've got the platform. It's not like it takes up space where something else would have been. And it's a thing. It's going to become a thing.
Right.
Maybe. Well, we'll see.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Okay, so the 23, D is obviously Disney. The 23 is 1923, which is when Disney founded the company.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's just confusing and stupid. It should just be the D convention or something.
Well, that sounds a little...
Sounds like you're gonna get more than just an animated feature.
Yeah.
Okay. I got another one.
Cool. Yeah, I have a few more.
Okay, cool. Hey, did you guys see the trailer for The Smashing Machine?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. The new Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah, but it looks like a foray into more serious art house.
Well, it's an A24 movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. Directed, written and directed by Benny Safdie.
Yes, one of the Safdie brothers who, they've been actors and made Uncut Gems, which gave them a bit more art house and sort of cinema credibility. And this is Dwayne Johnson looking rather different.
Yeah, he does look very different.
Under his prosthetic and makeup.
And a wig.
And a wig. And this is really what would make this special is that it's about the early days of the UFC.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is now this huge juggernaut as a sporting event, but started as the ultimate fighting championship.
Yep.
And Dwayne Johnson plays a real-life person called Mark Kerr. And I think it's an interesting one to just know is on the horizon.
Exactly.
It he has some chops.
Yeah, he's put in a few good performances here and there.
And so this could be him flexing his muscles more figuratively. Yeah. And we'll see what happens.
Which I think is very deliberate on his point because like his franchise stuff just hasn't been working. He hasn't had a big hit in a while.
Exactly. No, and I think if anyone is struggling in that world.
Yeah.
That you can so easily make these kinds of movies.
Yes.
These smaller, credible, independent films. You're not going to make an incredible amount of money.
Mm.
Famously, Wes Anderson pays these actors like minimum wage.
Yeah, it's union scale.
Union scale because there actually isn't this huge economy with these movies. But you can really build up some credibility.
Mm.
And you can really like... I think of someone like Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah.
He's got nothing to prove. He's got all that Harry Potter money.
Exactly.
And he's like, well, what could I be in? Well, let's just make these fucking weird ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just live through this kind of credibility of these movies. Mm. As opposed to a Liam Neeson, who's just like, I'm going to make the exact same fucking movie over and over again.
It's like
over and over again.
He did the serious stuff and then he did one action movie and then he kind of stuck.
But it's like, why would you keep fucking making Taken?
I don't know.
When you're Liam Neeson, you can just
We don't know what other offers he's getting.
Sure, but...
Like at this point in time, because he's done it like multiple times, he might just not be getting anything else.
But I would imagine, this is my argument, is that I would imagine that if you're Liam fucking Neeson, your agent could put you out to these A24s and go, hey, would you guys want Liam Neeson? And everyone would be like, fuck yes. To some degree, I would imagine. I think that they... choose to do that because of the paycheck.
Yeah. A lot of the time it'll be paycheck.
But it's not even that big a paycheck. Like Bruce Willis famously did some of those really cuck action movies that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Because he knew he had that condition.
Yeah.
And he was banking as much money as he could while he could.
Mm.
So he was just like, okay. And he took them all.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. Apparently it's he would not work more than 3 days and it was $1 million a day and that was it.
Hectic.
Yeah. That's why he was like Sylvester Stallone was like, we want you in one of the another expendable. One because he did one of them, and then he's like, we want you for 4 days, and he was like, nope, only do 3 days. That was it.
He'll only act in total for 3 days.
Yeah,
and he'll get paid $1 million.
Yeah, apparently a lot of those movies will notice. There's a lot of times where it's like the back of Bruce Willis's head. I'm doing air quotes because a lot of the time, whenever you can't see his face, it's a double.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's interesting.
Okay, you got one?
I do. I have a couple. Hey, did you see that Mr. Ryan Gosling, surely he can be a goose by now.
Yeah.
He could he can upgrade to a goose.
Mr. Ryan Goose.
Ryan Gosling is doing a Star War.
Oh.
Yeah, Ryan Gosling with Sean Levy, who's the guy who did Deadpool Wolverine.
Yeah. He knows how to handle a big movie.
Yeah, the two of them are doing a Star Wars movie. I think it's called Star Wars Starfighter. Apparently this is a... They're doing it on the cheap, so to speak. This is a much lower budget kind of Star Wars. It's not your $300 million. It's going to be a lot much smaller, much more focused movie.
Okay.
And we don't really know what it's about yet. It's called Starfighter, so it's probably going to be about a guy who flies a spaceship, which will probably be Ryan Gosling, who will probably be a Han Solo type. But it seems like they're doing like a cheaper, simpler movie, which is an interesting take. And it's Ryan Gosling, which gives it a bit of credibility, I think.
That's cool.
Yeah, hopefully that one's good.
Hey, did you see that there is going to be a 10 Things I Hate About You stage musical.
Oh, my Lord. Like they did with Mean Girls.
Like they did with Mean Girls.
Okay.
It's being adapted into a stage musical with music by Carly Rae Jepsen. Do you remember her?
Yes, I do.
And someone I don't know. And a book.
Okay.
By Lena Dunham.
Right.
And Jessica Huang. I don't know who that
Interesting.
Is.
Interesting.
10 Things I Hate About You, very famously, is Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew.
Yes.
But which
is a teen comedy.
Yeah, which is arguably why those kinds of movies live on.
Yeah.
Because they actually have this timeless underpinning.
Yes.
I also didn't know that Clueless is Emma.
Oh.
Clueless is Jane Austen's Emma.
Jane Austen, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Which you don't know because none of us have read Emma.
Yeah.
Lion King is Hamlet for those who needed that.
Yep.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
I just thought that that's like...
Why the hell not?
What we mustn't do
is
then make a movie of the stage musical, because that is fucking annoying.
Oh, that's going to happen. Oh, you said it now, and now it's in my head, and now it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah. Color Purple, it was fine.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do it. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Mean Girls, I think we could have done without it.
No one cared. No one saw it.
Yeah, we didn't need to see the movie of the musical.
Yes, exactly. Here, did you see we got a trailer for season 4 of Love, Death, and Robots?
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
I love those.
Yeah, I particularly like the first season. The second and third haven't quite landed as much. At least not like as consistently. There's always good episodes, but like we haven't had like a whole good season.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully they can capture some of that magic.
Because
it's a cool show.
Yeah, and I think these kinds of things just celebrate animation so well, because each episode is a vastly different style of animation, and you can really see some mind-blowing animation.
Yeah.
Like, really fucking cool. There's that one of that woman with all the jewelry, that like sort of Indian, almost looking character that's in the water that lures people into the water.
Yeah, it's a really, really unusual look.
And my favorite so far still is when the yogurt took over.
Yes.
Which
that
is
was
in
great.
Season 1, which is so good.
Oh, it's so good. I love the little goofy ones.
Yeah, then the one of that dude on the beach, the giant that washed up on the beach, was really
interesting. Good.
So interesting.
Yeah, that's based on a short story by J.G. Ballard, who's the guy who wrote Empire of the Sun. They're all based on like short stories.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yes, they're all adaptations of short stories.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
And did you see we got a trailer for Wednesday? The next season of Wednesday is coming.
I haven't watched that at all.
I thought it was cool.
Okay.
The first one was totally worth your time.
Nice.
And sort of managed to stick out past the rest.
Okay.
And we're going to get season 2. We'll see what that's like.
It was super popular, so
it was a big deal.
Not surprising at all.
Yeah.
It went down really well.
Yeah, it's cool to see Tim Burton in TV.
Yes. Yeah, it's an interesting space. I got a couple more.
Yeah, let's
rush through. I'm probably the only one here who cares about that. But did you see a trailer for a documentary called Not Just a Goof?
No.
So this is a documentary coming to Disney Plus about the making of a Goofy movie, which is an unironically great movie. It is a really good movie.
What makes it special?
It's just a really like sincere, interesting take. Like a character like Goofy, who's called Goofy because he's just Goofy. He's just comic relief.
Yeah.
And going, no, he's actually like an interesting character and he's a good dad.
Okay.
You know, and it's all about this father-son relationship with him and his you know, angsty teen son.
Yeah.
And it's genuinely a good movie.
When did a Goofy movie come out?
Ooh, late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay. And so this is looking at the production of
it. It's kind of looking back at it. It must be like an anniversary, like 20th or 25th or something.
Because it probably would have been a bit underrated by even Disney at the time. They maybe didn't even, you know, famously, The Lion King was being made at the same time as Pocahontas.
Yeah.
And Disney were famously putting their B team on Lion King.
Yes.
Because they really thought that Pocahontas was going to be the one.
Yep.
And so sometimes these underrated movies, the same with Emperor's New Groove, very famously was like, you know, no one held out the highest hopes. It kept having all these flaws. It it sort of made it through by the skin of its teeth.
Yeah, and it was a totally different film, and then they completely reworked it into like a comedy.
And those things usually result in the movie failing.
Yeah.
Because directors change, or you know, the whole plans of these things change. But somehow, miraculously, you can pull these things together, and you can end up having this product that just has what we call like the gooeys. It's got something in it. It's got that smarts. It's got it's got something. So okay, so Goofy Movie is what, on Disney Plus?
You can watch it. It was 1995.
Oh wow!
So it's been a long time. So what's that, 30th anniversary?
Yeah.
Jeez, luck. I'm old.
Yeah.
But the same thing happened with Toy Story 2, of all things.
Yeah.
They completely remade Toy Story 2. They had like a movie, and it wasn't a Pixar movie initially. It was being made by Disney that was going to go straight to video.
And someone was
and
like,
hold
on.
And then somebody stepped in and went, this is not working. This isn't good. It doesn't work. And they had, I think it was like a year where Pixar stepped in and basically remade the entire movie from scratch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it wound up being one of their most popular movies.
Interesting, hey? Yeah. And it's also, I thought about something the other day. We mentioned at one point when we were tracking Mickey 17.
Yes.
And we were tracking Sinners, and we were tracking their release dates. And there was originally a plan to have Sinners come first, and then Mickey 17 was going to be the Easter weekend release.
That's right.
And then for a reason we have no idea, it just swapped. And it's interesting that Sinners then got given the better slot.
Yeah.
Because when you think of, you know, where your front runners were and testing and what could be successful, obviously it's incredibly difficult to work this out.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, someone must have gone, no, Sinners has got something.
Sinners is the one we need to push.
Sinners has something over Mickey 17, and we need to give it that Easter weekend.
Yes.
And it's just proven so successful. Yeah,
it's doing well. It's hit, like, I think it hit $200 million now.
Yeah, it's on track to be, well, this is what the papers say.
Yeah.
It's on track to be one of the most successful original films of the decade.
Yeah.
Which is like fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rad. At the video store will champion and celebrate that original story.
Mm.
We crave that because we are surrounded by sequels and reboots and remakes, and we get it. And sometimes we're very excited about those things.
Yeah.
But I mean, to witness, you know, when I talk about it in the lobby to people, I've found myself saying, like, I think we're looking at a modern classic.
Yeah.
It's like it's just one of those. Looks like it's gonna be that.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
And you guys briefly spoke about the deal that Ryan Coogler has.
Yeah, yeah. We touched on it at the time. I didn't know all the details, but basically Ryan Coogler, the director, fashioned a very unique deal with Warner Brothers, which has a few things that are very different to what normal directors have. And the biggest one is the fact that after a period of time, the rights for that movie come back to him.
Yeah, it's in 25 years, so 2050.
Which is unprecedented, because usually...
It's kind of not unprecedented. The stuff has happened before.
But only once it's been like Spielberg,
it's
right?
Well, Tarantino gets this deal occasionally.
Okay.
And like Ryan Coogler kind of point, like people have like been talking about like, oh, this is going to like destroy Hollywood studios and this is going to be the downfall of Hollywood. And it's like, okay, but other people have had this deal before.
Okay.
Why are people making a big deal now that Ryan Coogler got this deal?
I think because people are stupid, like myself, who didn't know that others have this. It's not a common deal, but it has happened a few times before. We live in these little bubbles, and it's like it's 1984 stuff. Like we forget history.
Yes.
And if you don't tell us history, we'll think that we are living in the now without any precedents like this.
Yeah.
Okay, but that is cool. It's almost like he used the studio just to sort of make it with pretty much all risk to him, but he kind of used their services.
Yes.
Because very interestingly, in the music world, a lot of that is happening, where a big record label, I know Short Straw, is signed to a label services deal where they've gone, we don't necessarily want to put up the money on you, but you can use our services.
Okay.
So for a percentage, you can be a part of this big system,
but
we're not going to put up money up front. You got to put up the money, which means that you still own your masters,
yes,
but you can use our infrastructure.
Okay.
which I think is a smart way to kind of use everything that you have.
Yeah.
We've got all the offices, all the paperwork, all the people. We can put this thing out for you and manage it, but it's yours.
Yes.
So it's kind of, it feels like it's moving in that direction.
Okay.
Where they are seemingly reluctant to put up a lot of money.
Mm.
But in this case, they did give him money. But yeah, it's an interesting interesting thing to look at. And it's an interesting thing to see how the economy of all of this changes.
Hey, did you see? I find this stuff really interesting. One of the movies, because there are now several, that Warner Brothers has just put on a shelf is actually getting released.
Yeah, it's just the Coyote one.
Coyote versus Acme is going to be coming out next year.
Okay.
Which is cool. So there's a it's a company called Ketchup Entertainment, some weird name. They actually very recently released another movie that Warner Brothers just, one of their movies that they just chucked in the bin. They were like, here's a finished movie. Oh, let's put it in the bin. Because they've been doing that a bunch lately. Nobody knows what the hell Warner Brothers is thinking. It was another Looney Tunes movie. It was like that all animated Looney Tunes movie. I think it was called The Day the Earth Blew Up or something like that. Which is apparently great. All the reviews I've read are like, this is, if you like 2D animation and like slapstick, this is like a total love letter to that stuff. But they, it's the same company, they recently released that. Warner Brothers was just going to shelve that as well.
Yeah.
They did the same thing with Batgirl. They did the same thing with, there was a Scooby-Doo animated movie. They released a Scooby-Doo animated movie in, I think, 2020. And then they made a sequel to it. It's finished. And they just went, nah. In the bin.
I still don't understand how that works.
It's the somebody's doing the math and they're saying the tax return that we get on scrapping this film, because they'll get tax returns.
How do they get a tax return?
It's something about, I don't know, it's something about the tax incentives that they get for making films in certain places and that sort of thing. They'll get a tax return if they get rid of the movie in a certain amount of time after it was made. And they've figured out we'll get more money from that than we will by putting this out into the box office.
It's wild.
It's really bizarre.
And like, that doesn't make any sense, because if you've made the product, I get it, where you're like, okay, it would cost so much more to market it and it might not work.
Yeah.
And so we should just scrap it.
Yes.
Like that part makes some sense, and you kind of count your losses and that could maybe eat into profits, which help bring down what you have to pay in tax. Yeah. Like, that part kind of makes sense.
Mm.
But how you could make more money is what's flawed and fucked up about the system.
Yeah.
Okay, so then this other company clearly goes, okay, well, we can try and buy this because we can actually pick up this ready-made film that probably is made pretty well.
Yeah.
It's not dog shit.
By all accounts, everyone who's involved, and because they were testing this already, so test audiences have seen it. Yeah. And everyone's like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loved it. And they were like, we just don't think this is going to make money. Because there was some ridiculous amount. They were, early on, they were like negotiating with people. And apparently they were being like very obvious about it. They were like, people were coming in to say, like, distributors were coming to say, we will distribute this for you. But their deal was, you're going to pay $70 million and you have to agree to it right now, like in this meeting, which is why it didn't happen for such a long time. It's like been like a year or something since they started doing this. And now eventually they've made a deal. I think they paid something like $50 million and they're going to distribute now. And I'm assuming Warner Brothers will still make money off of the box office for this.
Yeah, wow.
And they're paying for distribution. I don't know exactly how it works, but at least the movie's getting released.
Okay.
Like all that work that thousands of people have put into it is actually going to see the light of day now.
Yeah. No, it's one thing to be working real hard to try and make a film and then the film, for whatever many reasons, doesn't get made. But to have this, you know, it's one thing to even shoot it, but you can't do post-production. Yes.
Like that's what happened with Batgirl. Batgirl was basically filmed and they were in post-production with it. And then they said, okay, we're not going to do this.
Wild.
But so it wasn't complete. Unlike these other ones, like this, both of these Looney Tunes movies and that, at least that Scooby-Doo movie, they're complete. They're finished films.
Interesting, yeah.
And Warner Brothers just like, boop, in the bin. We're done. It's so weird. The decisions David Zaslav is making are bizarre. It feels like he's stripping the company for parts so that they can sell it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But they've done well recently.
They have had a couple. They've had, dude, Warner Brothers have had a really bad couple of years.
Sure, but this year's been good.
Yes, this
Minecraft
is the first year.
Minecraft and Sinners.
Minecraft and Sinners have been like their big pickup.
Yeah.
But like last year and the year before, they had like one hit with Barbie.
Yeah.
But other than that, stuff like The Flash.
Yeah.
And Black Adam, all of these movies were huge flops. They lost, they've lost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Interesting.
Hundreds of millions.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. All right. Are those all the hey, did you guys
see?
That's
everything that I have.
Okay, lucky. We got to do some work now.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, I've got this box of DVDs that have just arrived that are now available for you to stream.
Yes.
And so we've got all our shelves here in the video store. And so we're going to put these, make sure these DVDs get put on the right shelf.
Cool.
Okay, what's the first one? I've got Saturday Night.
Oh, yes. I've been wanting to watch that.
That is now on Netflix.
Oh, sick.
Okay, so you can put that over on the Netflix shelf.
Nice.
We've got Gladiator 2.
Oh, where's that?
That is now on Showmax.
Oh, cool. Okay. I need to get Showmax. I don't have it.
Yeah.
But it seems like a decent amount of stuff goes there.
Yeah.
All the HBO stuff is there.
It's all the HBO stuff. So things like Day of the Jackal and some of the more interesting
Last
stuff.
Of Us is up there.
And then there's a cackload of local stuff.
Yes.
All right, so Gladiator 2 over on the Showmax shelf. I think it's a good, that's a good renter movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool in cinemas to see that on the big screen, but it didn't shift the dial for me, so to speak. So it's a nice thing to watch at home. Complete Unknown, the Timothy Chalamet, Bob Dylan biopic that did so well at the Bioscope.
Nice.
We had months of sold out screenings with it.
Awesome.
That is finally on Disney Plus.
Yes.
I also saw, speaking of, we spoke about it a little bit earlier, Clueless is now on Disney Plus. It's a classic.
Okay.
Alicia Silverstone, Paul Rudd.
Yes.
But it's cool that sometimes these old movies, you know, do license themselves and move around. That's now on Disney Plus. That's totally worth your time.
Okay.
As we said, it's an adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma.
Yeah.
But yeah, just one of those classics. When you think of all those movies that came out at that time, it's always interesting to see which ones stick around.
Yes.
I had the very unique privilege of talking to members of the band Wheatus.
Oh, wow.
We played a show with them. They came out and played this festival called Lush. And we were just talking about Teenage Dirtbag.
Okay.
And the one guy really admitted, in all honesty, he's like, we, you know, came out with that song, a whole bunch of other friends and other bands that we played and toured with at the time.
Yeah.
And we thought we were going to be just like them. Like, this one day the song just won't be that big anymore, and we'll have to accept that.
Yeah.
And he's like, it just keeps sticking around. And he's like, and just when we thought, you know, okay, cool, that's it, great run.
Yeah.
A band like One Direction released this, you know, live concert film where they then cover Teenage Dirtbag.
Nice.
And he's like, all of a sudden we're like, oh, fuck, we're back in it. It's not dying. It's never going to die. It's lonely.
Nice.
So it's cool that some of these films just survive over others. I just find that really, really interesting. Wild Robot, the animation that I championed the whole of last year.
Yeah.
That's on Showmax.
Cool.
And then it's also worth mentioning A Real Pain, which was the other big Oscar film of this year, is on Disney Plus.
Disney Plus, yeah.
That is very much a streaming movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because it's a very small, very intimate story. Two cousins go on a Holocaust tour of Europe. This is the film that Kieran Culkin won everything for, including the Oscar, as his best supporting actor role. I think it's lovely.
Yeah, and Jesse Eisenberg got best original screenplay.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's lovely.
It's good. Yeah, it's lovely. I really I enjoyed that one.
Okay, so those are all those ones on those shelves, which I think is a good one.
A couple which we can mention, and a slightly older one that's now on Netflix from a couple of years ago that Cole and I have sung the praises of. Puss in Boots: The Last Wish is now on Netflix.
Oh,
such a great film!
Did you know that that was a huge inspiration for Sinners?
Oh, really?
And Ryan Coogler, in an interview, revealed that Puss in Boots: The Last Wish was a big influence.
Wow, okay.
He's like, the eyes, the villain.
Yes.
He's like, have you heard Ryan Coogler talk?
Yes.
He's, it's not how you'd imagine he would speak. But he's like, yeah, bro.
Yeah
bro. Big influence, bro.
Yes.
Which I thought was so cool.
It's a great film. It's a good movie.
Once again, this is what fascinates me. This is what, you know, here's a sequel to a spin-off character that then just shines through. And you're like, what is the magic?
Whose previous film came out 12 years earlier?
What is the secret sauce?
Yeah.
And how did this one get over the line?
Yeah.
And just how it just, when it came out, that, yeah, obviously it's got to be appealing to little kids, but little kids are relatively easy to please.
Yeah.
But it's like, how does this, how does its teeth sort of sink in further?
Yeah.
So that someone like yourself.
Well, a lot of why this film, why people have kind of latched onto this film is a lot of it deals with like anxiety and panic attacks and that sort of thing. Okay. And they portray that stuff really well, like really, really well.
Okay.
And I think that's part of why like an older audience has gone, okay, this kind of has, this has something to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's just a really good movie.
Well, that's perhaps a really good segue into Thunderbolts.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Because after all the fucking Marvel movies, how many times have we had a bad guy wanting to end the world in the MCU? 20? 30?
At least. I don't know how many. They've made more than 30 movies. So.
They've made more than 30 movies. And we all know how successful Marvel's been.
Yes.
Crescendoing in the big Avengers where, you know, half the world fucking disappeared. And then they kind of came back.
Yep.
They came back. Biggest movies of sort of all time. What the fuck do we do now?
Yeah.
Because we still want to milk this teat. The best thing they should have done is just not made movies for a while.
And well, at least pumped the brakes for like 5 years and just not made anything and then came back.
And then come back. But of course, Hollywood will never do that.
No, no, no.
Why? Why would they do that? So now you've got to rethink things. And so in the MCU, they have just released Thunderbolts, which is a ragtag, you know, group of assassins similar to the spirit of Suicide Squad that are coming together. And I think just to give a broad overview, who they are up against is really someone that is pushing this idea of mental health.
Yeah, kind of.
I think I'd want to hear perhaps this more from you. But I found it interesting that our villain and what that... they're not even a villain.
Yeah.
I think it's quite hard to explain. And
it
And I think what's interesting about Thunderbolts is that they are shooting for something a little more cerebral, a little more depth, a little more nuance, which is quite a challenge.
Yes.
And so who did they bring on? They brought on other writers, people behind The Bear.
Okay. I actually don't know who wrote this.
They really were trying to think out of the box in terms of how do we make another superhero movie that that is different, that's post what was the fucking big purple guy?
Thanos.
Yeah, like a post Thanos kind of superhero movie. And so it's trying to be more. And I think for many people that'll work. I think for you, how did you feel?
It didn't land for me.
Yeah, and why did it not? Man, what did you want it to be?
I don't know. I didn't really know what I wanted this to be. I'm so detached from Marvel these days. I'm not excited for anything that they're doing. So I don't really put the time into thinking about it. But it just, one of the big things is I kept waiting for it to get going. Felt like it was like, and then it ended. And I was like, but like nothing, it feels like nothing's happened.
Yeah, there were definitely these moments where it was like, we're trying for kind of quippy dialogue, but it didn't land. And I never found myself laughing. It was the same as in a movie like Joker. There was a few moments where you sort of tried to make a joke, and I never sort of even chuckled.
Yeah.
I never sort of reacted. We were introduced to a character who has incredible power, and I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah.
But really, how this person's power manifests, and what is the antagonistic part. I don't want to necessarily call him a villain, but in a way he becomes a villain for a while. What we really are at the mercy of is this person's mental health and his unbalance. And so that's really who we are fighting against. It's not this idea of wanting to take over the world or believing that the world needs to be a certain way.
Yes.
But we are actually battling this person's depression and anxiety and mental health.
Yes.
And so it was quite interesting that that was the villain, so to speak. I appreciated that we were watching something a little different in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. There's that.
But at the end of the day, as much nuance and intricacies and sort of uniqueness.
Yeah.
We are still dealing with people in like superhero suits that fight crime.
Yeah.
So it's like, this will always be a Marvel movie.
Yes.
And so it doesn't land as well as you want it to in that sense.
I don't think it gave us much of a reason to really give a shit about these characters. I really like these actors. Like, they're all, it's full of like really good people. Florence Pugh is great.
Yeah, David Harbour.
David Harbour is amazing.
He's really good.
You know, all of them, even like Wyatt Russell has grown on me.
Yeah.
And I was like not impressed with him at first because it's obviously Kurt Russell's son.
Yeah.
But I think he's gotten better and better and better. And he is good in this. Like, everyone is good in this. They're just not like given much to do with.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with these characters.
Sure. And
it also felt unintentionally small. Like, it feels like a very contained film in a way that it makes it feel like it's shot on sets. You can feel that they're not, like, on city streets. It doesn't feel like they're in a real city. It's just like there's... The backdrop is always just, like, a building.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, but where's the rest of it? I'm kind of going, where's everything else that we need to be seeing here?
Because, yeah, these movies have to be big.
Yes.
Like, they have to feel huge.
You have to, like, underpin some kind of spectacle here, and there's, like, none of that.
And then also what's challenging is that why the Avengers movies were as successful as they were is that each of those people got their own movies beforehand.
Yes.
So they built them up in a beautiful sort of structure.
Yeah.
So that we were all ready and we knew the back characters. Mm. Where here we get a whole bunch of people put together where we've never quite seen them on their own.
Yeah, they've all been in things.
Mm.
But it's all the things that people have kind of detached from post-Endgame.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. But I think it's being celebrated.
I mean, it's doing well.
Some people are digging it.
Yeah. In general, it seems like most people are responding well to it.
Yeah.
First, it didn't land, though.
I was a bit meh.
At this point, I can't quite put my finger on why.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's not wade in it. Can we talk about some TV?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I have been watching Good American Family.
Okay.
On Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Do you remember about a year ago, 2 years ago, there was a rather astounding story of a family in America that had adopted a little girl.
Right.
And it was discovered that she was a lot older.
Oh, right.
Do you remember this story?
I do kind of remember this.
Okay, so your memory is very similar to mine, where it's like the world got told, here was this family that adopted this little girl and...
Who may or may not have actually been a little girl, is that the thing?
Yes,
okay,
exactly. And that was what I remember, which was like, fuck, how haunting is that? It was actually this adult with a form of dwarfism that was pretending to be a little girl, and she was from the Ukraine.
Okay.
And how crazy and wild is this?
Yes.
And then we all kind of move on.
Yeah.
This is the story of that.
Okay.
Okay. And what's very interesting is that there's a lot more to this story.
Right.
What is very interesting is that in this world of true crime, it's very similar to a court case. It's like you've got these two opposing arguments.
Yeah.
And you as the filmmakers or the TV show have to show these stories, and you have to show these different sides.
Right.
And all you've got is this court documents and these information. Mm. And you've got to build your TV show.
Right.
And what we're seeing, I think, being done very successfully in what makes these true crime TV shows so successful is, and it's a masterclass for people to be really studying, is how these perspectives are shown.
Right.
And how you are led to believe through this story that this is the case.
Okay.
That she is older, she's quite unhinged. She's kind of terrorizing this family in a way. It's quite turns into like a little bit of a horror.
Right.
But then there's so much more when you realize the rest. And then you all of a sudden get it from her perspective.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, after a few episodes, your feelings about the family completely change.
Right.
So I don't want to give too much away, but it's this lovely roller coaster of perspectives where all of a sudden you're like, oh, fuck.
Yes.
And then, of course, not wanting to also give too much away, but there is so much more to the story. It's not as obvious as that.
Right.
More is revealed. More is clearly there in the facts that prove she's not. She actually is a child.
Right.
That's what sort of comes out.
Okay.
But you must enjoy this kind of roller coaster.
Yes.
And how the American law works, and right. how this fucked her, and how these moments to appeal and the moments to change, and
okay.
it's very interesting.
Right.
So yeah, Good American Family. The matriarch is the woman who was Grey in Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, okay, yes.
And she actually plays quite an questionable character.
Right.
Where I think in Grey's Anatomy she was the sort of sweetheart that everyone yes. came to love and admire and yeah. respect. She's playing the complete opposite.
Okay.
The girl who's cast as Natalia,
mm-hmm.
who's the young girl in the whole story, she acts really well.
Okay.
And of course that would be a very challenging role to cast.
Yes.
Is how do you cast this person that both looks like a kid and is
yeah.
an adult or could be an adult?
Okay.
But yeah, it's a very interesting show. And I think cool. just in the age of how we tell these true crime stories, you've got a very, very juicy subject here, which I didn't necessarily want to get into. Liz, my wife, started watching it and I was like, this just feels like dirty and it just feels like, it just feels negative and it feels weird. And I was like, I don't really want to get into this. And then after watching one episode over his shoulder, I was like, all right, I'm in. If I can go to the next one. So yeah, it's a challenging watch in that sense. Like okay. it's not an easy watch.
Yes.
But it's good television.
Because right.
it's such a unique story.
Yes.
It penetrated the world many years ago. I mean, imagine knowing that the whole world knew that story.
Yeah.
But kind of only knew the first chapter.
Yes.
That didn't really actually know the rest.
Interesting. That's cool.
Another really great one is I've gotten more into Do Not Attempt, the David Blaine show on Disney Plus.
Yes.
We mentioned it a while ago because we got invited to the premiere of it. Mm. They did a launch of it in Sandton a few weeks ago, and we got shown the South African episode. But basically,
okay.
I've now started watching more.
Cool.
And it's a very cool show.
All right.
David Blaine, who is a very famous street magician, which then went on to be a very interesting endurance
yes.
Performer
yeah.
who did crazy like stunts. Mm. He was very inspired by Harry Houdini. So he wanted to do all sorts of interesting challenges
yes.
over the years, where in the middle of Times Square, he got encased in ice. He's done the most incredible things where he was in a glass coffin, buried alive. There was things where he, for about 40 days, this guy didn't eat. He only drank water. Because you can do this
yes.
sort of thing. And I really implore folks to listen to some of the other podcasts that have interviewed him.
Okay.
Because he's obviously done a fair amount of press recently around Do Not Attempt being on National Geographic. I think it was the one with Armchair Expert.
Right.
Where he really gets into the weeds of like how those stunts were possible, how those endurance acts were possible.
All right.
Things like after 40 days of not eating,
yeah.
only drinking water, he innocently sort of at the end of the one day, once he was now released, sort of thought I could have a few potato chips, some Lay's chips. And he said it fucked him.
Right.
He has to very slowly, like the hardest part was actually getting his body back to normal.
Okay.
You can't just eat food yes. after doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to be on certain IV drips and you have to sort of like grow your stomach again because Jesus. Like your stomach, your body starts eating itself effectively. That's what yeah. happens. And there was a very interesting question, which was, the hunger.
Yeah.
Like, how do you handle the hunger? He's like, that goes away after 2 days.
Oh, yeah,
you then just become like weird and delirious.
Jeez, like.
But Do Not Attempt is David Blaine traveling the world
yeah.
to all different parts of the world to discover and learn about the magic of those places.
Okay.
and meet these incredible people that do these incredible stunts and acts and performances that are magic.
Right.
So that he can learn. He ends up doing a lot of them with them.
Okay.
So he challenges himself. But you really get to meet these incredible people around the world that really do the most crazy things. Like from the Arctic Circle, those guys that like jump off like those like high sort of ice walls into the ice. How they do that, how their body can withstand that ice. The guys in India that like put knives through their like throats.
Yes. Yeah, it's bizarre.
And like bulge their eyeballs out. There's a dude in the sort of Far East that like can kiss cobras.
Oh.
Like he sort of tames the cobra in such a way that he can actually lean over and like kiss the top of their head. And then the challenge is David Blaine because he's like, nah, I want to fucking do it. Like, and it's interesting also when you listen to some of these other podcast episodes, you learn how he's reprogrammed his brain to not be afraid.
Oh, right.
You know, there was one thing he did where he stood on a pillar that was very high above the ground. He did it in New York or somewhere. And he reprogrammed his brain to not be afraid of heights.
Oh, okay.
Because he's like standing on this little pillar.
Yeah.
Is the same as just standing on the floor.
Mm.
And you have to sort of tell your brain that.
Right.
And so he's like reprogrammed his brain. So he's the perfect guy to go around the world and go like, I want to try that too.
Okay. Like,
fuck, I'm keen. Brazil was an amazing episode. Okay. The Indian one is crazy. And then there is a South African episode. And cool. I think that's quite cool for us to see ourselves amongst everyone else. What they pointed out is spinners, which is the that classic like car spinning in circles in tracks, is a form of magic in the sense that it's a magic act where these people have dedicated so much time to crafting this incredible act, and he does it too.
Yes.
You know, he also leans out the car and like does these moves with them. It's cool. It's great when a host gets stuck in as much as he does.
Yes.
Where it's not just like, oh, I'm not going to do anything.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to really light myself on fire and jump off this bridge in Brazil because I've always wanted to do that.
Yes.
And so there are guys in Brazil that like specialize in lighting themselves on fire.
Right.
Like, how the fuck do you do that?
Yeah.
Another really great thing which we enjoyed this weekend, which we're about three quarters of the way through, is The Four Seasons.
Okay.
Which is a show on Netflix.
Yeah.
It is a limited series. Because it's got a bunch of really famous folk in it.
Right.
It's based off a movie by Alan Alda.
Okay.
Who we know from MASH. Who actually was has a little cameo in the show.
Okay.
I don't really know about the movie. But basically, we have got Will Forte.
Cool.
Tina Fey. Steve Carell.
Nice.
Coleman Domingo.
Cool.
And it's really the story of these three or four couples.
Yeah.
And they're all in their like 40s, 50s. And so it's very much a show for an older generation in that sense. But over the course of what I think is going to be about 8 episodes, we see the interdynamics of these couples across the seasons. It's across 1 year, I'd imagine.
Right.
We're pretty much at the start. Steve Carell is celebrating an anniversary with his wife, and he says to them, like, I want to get a divorce. Like, I need to move on.
Right.
And that sets this whole thing in motion.
Okay.
But every episode, all the episodes are different getaways that these couples have done together. So the first is, like, to go to the holiday home to celebrate the anniversary. The other one is, like, now a holiday that they've taken.
Okay.
Then the next is to all get somewhere for one of the daughter's graduations. So we're never in their own home. We're always, like, in this kind of weekend away. And Coleman Domingo is in a relationship with an Italian man.
Right.
It's quite nice to see Coleman Domingo in a gay role as a man who is queer.
Yeah.
So that's quite cool for him to be him in that sense.
Yes.
Will Forte and Tina Fey are a couple that get along, but their marriage is strained.
Right.
And I think it's quite cool to, it's a little bit like we saw it for the first time in This Is 40.
Right.
Where you see a comedy that plays into the challenges of keeping marriages going.
Okay.
And there's this lovely debate whether or not one should keep it going and try and make it work. Yes. Or Steve Carell's argument is like, I got to end this now, guys. I only live once.
Yeah.
I'm done. We, you know, our kids are in college. Like, I want to move on. Mm. I need to live again, you know. So it's this lovely sort of watershed moment that I think many people hit
right.
in their 40s and 50s, which is like, okay, the second half of my life, you know, I really need to live. Mm. Or you're my person. We must make this work. Mm. And so it's really subtle in that sense, but it's a great show. And cool. Of course, I love the actors where you know if they're in it, it's going to be good.
Yes.
Because they are the kind of people that usually are involved in the writing. Right. I speak of someone like Tina Fey.
Yeah.
And you know that that writing is going to be of a particular caliber of quality. And like Tina Fey is not going to just do anything.
Yeah.
There's a handful of actors, you love them, but it's like, you know, they could be in some shitty things every now and again where they're doing the best work in what is a pretty average movie.
Yeah.
But someone like Tina Fey, Colman Domingo, they don't just do anything. And so it's Steve Carell as well. Like, he's not going to just say yes to everything.
Yes.
So it's a good show. So it's cool. The four seasons.
Okay.
It seems like roughly two episodes is a season.
Right.
So it's like you start with spring.
Okay.
And then it's, you know, summer, winter, whatever.
Cool.
So yeah.
Nice.
That's on Netflix.
Nice.
Anything you're enjoying?
I don't want to get too into it right now. We can come back to it when it's done, but I have been watching Andor.
Cool.
Which is the Star Wars. All right. The Star Wars that everyone thinks is good. Which is a nice change.
The one that seems more universally praised.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Do you join that praise?
Yeah. Oh, no, I think it's great. Okay. It's so cool.
And this is now season two.
Season two, yeah. Which I think is, they're only doing these two seasons.
Okay.
I think it's 12 episodes each.
And what do you think makes it more praised than the other Star Wars stuff?
I think it's just, it's a different take. It is slightly more quote unquote grown up. It is like a more mature take on Star Wars.
Okay.
It doesn't quite have the goofiness that we're used to from Star Wars. And it has that, but it's good enough to back it up. It's really easy to just like make a dark and gritty Star Wars. That's easy.
Yeah.
But it would most likely be terrible. But it's well written enough and well acted enough that it carries it.
Okay. It's interesting when franchises do that because people have to often remember in the criticism of Star Wars that as the fans get older, one has to remember that Star Wars is primarily made and has always been made for kids.
Yep.
And so there will always be this kid-like characters and charm and appeal. And then what's interesting is when franchises do try and give something to the now older audience, like Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
And sort of trying to give it a more grown-up, extensions.
Yes.
But Andor seems to have done it well. They seem to have just struck a great sort of lightning in a bottle moment.
Exactly.
Why do you think the others have been more, divisive?
Yeah, I don't even know. I think it's just, I think what a lot that? Of it just comes down to the writing.
What is that word I'm looking for?
Divisive.
Divisive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it just comes down to the fact that it is well made enough to back it up. It doesn't feel like out of place in Star Wars. It's still Star Wars, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like they're doing it for its own sake. It doesn't feel like they're going, oh, we're making one for adults for the sake of making something for adults.
Yeah.
It feels like purposeful.
Okay. And I think why and how it got phrased many years ago when we spoke about season one was like someone going, it's just a great thriller. It just happens to be in space.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Is that the same idea?
Yeah, I think so. Plus Diego Luna's freaking awesome.
Yeah, he is cool.
Such a good lead.
Yeah.
And he feels like in place. Like he feels like he fits into like the tone of Star Wars really well.
What is the world of Andor?
Well, I mean, it's all over the place.
But I mean, what is the idea? He's a what doing what?
He is a member of the resistance. So okay, this so is like early days of pre-Luke Skywalker, post-Darth Vader, pre-Luke Skywalker. So the Empire is in place.
Okay.
And it really, something that it does that's, sometimes it's funny, like intentionally funny. Sometimes it's like how serious it is just how like bureaucratic and shit the Empire is. Like okay. A lot of it deals with these like petty squabbling, you know, bureaucrats who kind of just want power,
okay.
You know, like these little people who want,
yeah,
you know, who want whatever power they can like get out of a bureaucracy.
But so it wasn't Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker obviously in the same time.
Yeah. But I'm saying like Luke, this will be in a time period when Luke Skywalker was still like a child on a little desert ball somewhere.
Okay. And Darth Vader has come to be.
Yes. So this is after episode 3, but before episode 4.
Okay.
So it's in that like gap there where they're doing a lot of stuff in that time period and it gets a little tiresome. But they're doing this well because we're kind of seeing sides of the Empire that we've never seen before. The side of the Empire that we've normally seen is just like the cartoonish evil of the Emperor and Darth Vader.
Yeah.
As opposed to this, which is a much more like grounded bureaucracy, you know, it's much more like believable fascist.
Okay.
You know, underpinnings.
Okay.
And you get to see those people and how sometimes they're horribly evil and sometimes they're just like hilariously inept.
Okay. You know,
like there's a whole, I don't want to get too into it, but there's like two people from the previous season who are both like, they have some sort of position within the Empire, but a bit, the whole episode, their story in this episode is about the one character's really overbearing, controlling mother coming over for dinner.
Okay.
And like you do that in Star Wars.
Okay.
And it's great.
Okay. Lovely.
It's that sort of thing. The other thing, just to talk about it briefly, that I've been watching, I didn't even know this existed, but they put out a second season of Light and Magic, which is the documentary series about industrial light and magic, which is the visual effects company.
They've done it as a TV show, not as a documentary.
Yeah. The first one is a 6-part documentary that goes all the way back, because industrial light and magic was created to make Star Wars.
Yes.
And initially, that's all that it did. Once Star Wars was done, they were like, this company is going to like stop existing basically until they do another Star Wars. So it goes from there, from like their creation up until probably sometime in the 90s once they like just started doing CGI. So like up to like Jurassic Park basically.
Okay.
And then this one picks up after that when they're going to start doing the prequels.
Okay.
So it's the second season's only 3 episodes, but it's like all about the production of like the prequels and all the technology that they had to create to do that.
I think that's very cool. That's called Light and Magic.
Yeah.
And that's on Disney.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, George Lucas is like maybe the most important person in Hollywood in terms of what he's created.
Yeah, which is how when these laser sounds had to come up, someone, you know, for the first Star Wars, like someone had to make those lasers.
But I mean, not just that, in terms of like digital cameras. That's because of George Lucas. George Lucas is the guy who said, we need to shoot this digitally. We need to move to a digital production. Digital editing, like non-linear digital editing, exists because of George Lucas. Digital sound editing exists because of George Lucas. He's the guy who's pushed for all of these things to be created.
Yeah.
He was like decades ahead of his time because he's faced so much. And even like digital projectors, that's George Lucas. They exist. They're like, they became popularized because of him.
Sure.
But it also gets into something that is interesting, is kind of like that response that we all know about that happened to episode 1. But then it also gets into like how that affected these people who actually made the movie.
Mm.
Like Ahmed Best is the guy who played Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
Talks about standing on a bridge about to kill himself.
Yeah.
Because the reaction was like so strong to it. Wow. That's like how negative people responded to it, and actually get into like what these criticisms were and like which ones like invalid and which ones don't really make sense and that sort of thing. It's an interesting side of it.
Sure.
It's good though. They're really, really well made. It's directed by Joe Johnston, who's the guy who directed like Captain America and The Rocketeer and all these movies. I like him.
Magic. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Thank you, man. What a lovely day.
Mm.
It's nice chatting.
Yeah.
Good chat. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sticking around, browsing the shelves while we had ourselves a chat.
Yeah,
feel free to chime in. This Please. Is your chance to let us know what you've been enjoying.
Mm.
You can always give us a hey, did you guys see anywhere in our social media, as well as any returns that you have. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, our guest episodes are linked in our home base, which is the video store. That's here. That's it. We're going to have some nice guest episodes coming up on the horizon.
Nice.
Every now and again, we have one of our guests pop in. So yeah, in for a good time.
Nice.
We'll see you guys again next week.
Yes.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.